This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome along to this bonus episode of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. The Countdown Gets Cultured.
Cultured
is this new sub-sample of the show that we're trying out. We'll see just how long it lasts for. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this one today we're doing for the Perth Revelation, the Revelation Perth Film Festival, which kicks off on July 1st, I believe, and runs until July 11th. And this film that we got to see as part of an advanced screening, thanks to Anarchy, thank you very much there, is called The Killing of Two Lovers. It's
That's part of
the festival. It's a 2020 American drama written, directed, produced, and edited by Robert McOwen. Yeah, there we go.
Beautiful.
Stars Clayne Crawford, who was also a producer on the film, Sepadiah Moafi, Chris Coy, and a bunch of other people you've never heard of before.
Never.
It's 84 minutes long, and it currently has a 93% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes based on 81 reviews with an average of 8 out of 10. Metacritic, which only has 17 reviews, has given it a weighted score of 84 out of 100, representing universal acclaim.
Really?
Wayne, what is The Killing of Two Lovers about?
Okay, folks. It's set in a tiny rural town in Utah, and it is a slow burner about a man, Clayne Crawford, who desperately tries to keep his family of six people together during a separation that's happening from his wife. See, the wife and him both agree to see each other people, but he struggles like a mofo to come up to terms with their new relationship. It is a drama.
Very much so.
A drama. Total drama.
Yeah, there's nothing else. There's no other genre this could be described as. And I think you hit a key word there or description there, and that is slow burn.
Very slow burn.
And arty, hence the culture.
Yes.
Right? Very arty film. Very represented.
Total art house.
In a very strange / novel way, and that is very long, slow takes. Camera might pivot round. Very wide shots of this Utahian kind of mountain range behind this tiny little town, which looks like it maybe has 300 or 400 people.
Dude, tops. It's a tiny little town spaced out.
Everybody knows
everybody. South Park. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit like South Park. Everyone knows everybody as represented through the course of the film as well. Now, got to be honest, I knew nothing going in.
Neither did we. Because that's the thing about indie film and cinema and stuff is that you know nothing. You are there to test, I think, for me anyway, your attention span. Because it's on purpose. These are not blockbusters that easily, like, they're not, it's more nutritious entertainment, shall we say. There's more cerebral stuff going on. You have to identify it and appreciate it from a few different angles rather than going, wow, what's the loudest thing that just happened? Or what's the biggest?
Given the last month of the show has been pretty much all action films on the main review, and then the month before that was all horror films. Obviously, this represents quite a step away from what we normally cover on the course of the show. And I have to say, it has a great deal going for it, this movie. I think the central performance from Clayne Crawford, he of the Lethal Weapon, the TV show, took me a lot. I didn't place him until at the very end of the movie.
We were walking out,
and I said to you, was that the dude from Lethal Weapon? So right towards the end, you went, yeah, that was him.
That's the only thing I knew going in, because I hadn't heard of any of the other actors. So
he's really channeling Casey Affleck pretty hard in this movie.
Yeah, you mean like Casey Affleck from like the Billy, what's it called?
Ghost Story and the film, which he was nominated for around
for
the
Brad
time.
Pitt?
Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, which one I didn't actually see.
Neither did I. I just
my
know
confusion
of
there. But it just very much feels like put Casey Affleck in a beard. This is his kind of role. So I think Clayne Crawford does a good job. He's in every scene of the film. The film literally follows him from moment to moment as he tries to, as you say, come to terms with his separation. But it starts in this very, very powerful way. It's a spoiler, but
It's literally the first
literally
scene of the
very first shot of the film is this. So
tell us.
Right, it shows him standing over
Close up of his face first.
Close up of his face, then slight wide shot. He's holding a gun.
He's in a bedroom and he's pointing the gun at people who are in the bed.
A woman and a man, and then the toilet flashes behind him and he jumps out the window and
escapes. Yeah, he gets scared and goes, gets out.
And then the opening credits are over him. Basically, it's just following him on foot.
Yeah.
As he runs down the road to where
handheld cam, running by.
Actually, where he's living, because that's, again, how small the town is.
Yes, he can run from house to house and go to his truck. And that was it. So you're like, holy shit, he's got a gun. I was like, I jumped back. I was like, whoa.
And remembering the film was called The Killing of Two Lovers.
Right.
So this, it kind of sets things up.
You're expecting
certain things.
The killing of something, aren't you, Paul?
You are.
Okay.
No,
so,
and not to give away anything else beyond that. But the other thing to note before we do get into spoiler section is it's presented in 4:3.
which I didn't notice for a while.
Didn't you?
No.
Half the screen's just black on the corners.
I think I noticed it when it started and went, oh, this must be like, you know, like, this happens sometimes and then you go back to widescreen. They never did that for this show. And then I forgot about it. I just went, oh, okay. So, yeah.
So it's notable and it's kind of strange because it's, again, this very wide, sort of lending itself to the best parts of widescreen, letterbox, 16:9, cinema. And it's just not showing that way. So we kind of get this cramped feeling despite that vista.
Right, which is a bit of a, like, for me, because the town itself, like you said, it's a wide open space and it's a tiny little town though. So he's somewhat, I don't know if he's cramped or he's isolated. I'm not sure exactly what that's doing, but I'm sure that was the decision they made with the 4-3. They said, let's just do this and maybe it'll help me feel more crowded in, just like this character seems kind of crowded in. So I think that's what they're going with it.
Well, we haven't really given away. I mean, we have implied, but Wayne, did you like this movie or did you not?
No, I'm sorry. But I'm not saying that it doesn't have merit, and I don't think that, and this is definitely for some people. And if you look at that Metacritic score and stuff, clearly the people whoever needed to see this film has seen it. You know what I mean? Like, obviously it's just for people like who have a better attention span than me. And look, don't get me wrong, I don't mind a slow burn if it gets to me the whole way. What I think happened with this film, I think, is that I actually don't think it was a failure on any... It just wasn't for me. I think that because the film is so drawn out on purpose, and I think if you're... Don't get me wrong, I absolutely identify with the heartbreak of the main character.
Yep.
Like, I understand what it's like to, you know, be like that. Like when you're sort of, I don't know what it's like to have kids or a wife, but like, you know, when you are pining for someone and it's agreed that she's banging someone else and then you got to deal with that situation, but it's legit because that's what you agreed. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit, you can see the pain on his face and it is for that reason an excellent performance. Okay. Then you got scenes with him and his kids and you can see how like just insidiously the one of the kids is not dealing with it and he has to deal with that. And all that kind of crap is really, really good drama. It just took a long time. It just took a long time for me.
Yeah, I would agree that for 84 minutes, it feels much, much longer than that.
Yeah, and that's it. And the thing is, you know, I don't want to say that you've got to, you know, blow my mind every 10 seconds of a film, but you need to give me something. And this movie on purpose, by the way, it doesn't actually give you something. And I think that's the point of the movie. But it's not necessarily for me.
You'll have to talk about that, the point of that film, when we get into spoilers.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I would agree with you. And maybe it's something to do with, you know, it was really great to go to this Perth Revelation International Film Festival kind of screening, and the organisers of it sort of Skyped in from the eastern states where they were and talked quite a bit really about the program and whatever. And then we got what felt like 20 trailers for different films in there. And by the time the film actually started, we'd been sitting there for 45 minutes. And I think maybe that didn't help this movie, if I'm really honest.
Honestly, yes, that was a little drawn out. And it was a school night, you know, and I'm old.
But I think it wouldn't have felt as long if we hadn't had sort of 40-minute or 45-minute preamble, you know what I mean?
Probably. Yeah. I'm not going to say also that I wasn't necessarily... Like, it was a cinematic experience. I was sitting there looking at it, noticing things about it and all that type of thing. It's... I'll tell you something that did give me the shits a bit is the score or the soundtrack or something.
Really? Because I think that was really impactful.
Interesting. Now, here's what the...
It's discordant. It's meant to be...
It goes...
Disconcerting.
Dong, 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 dong. And I'm like, what the fuck
is
that?
And it almost sounds like a gun being cocked.
I know. And I'm like, so what is he doing? And there's a gun as featured in the movie. So is it that his gun's cocked? And I remember looking about it going, now, what am I supposed to think?
It's meant to put you on edge. It's meant to keep you where he is, which is completely and utterly on edge and... uncertain about what's going to happen next, because he's not certain what's going to happen next. Is he going to kill these people? Is he going to try and win it back? What's he going
to
do?
He's target practicing in the mountains. That's what I'm saying. What does he want? So we don't know what he wants to do, and he doesn't seem to know what he wants to do as well.
Exactly.
I'll tell you this though: for a guy who's sneaking into someone's house or his ex house or whatever, leveling a gun at people who are sleeping's head, then he gets scared by the toilet flushing, he jumps out. Then for the rest of the film, he then does not go on to be much of as dangerous a man.
Pause there because we'll get into that on spoilers.
Okay, good.
But otherwise, I would agree with you. It's not a great film by my reckoning.
No.
But that's us trying to culture ourselves, hence this sort of byline.
No, you got to look at
but
this
But if you're
stuff.
Into this kind of thing, you should absolutely check it out.
And if you're that type of person who's given 93% on, you know, and you know what movie you're watching, so it's just that I'm a bore, everyone. That's what it is, all right?
All right, well, then let's hit the spoiler button and we'll get into the rest of the film on the other side of Jack.
You can't handle the truth!
Well, and neither can Clayne Crawford's character, apparently, which is that it's okay to agree to see other people, but then what you probably should do is see someone else rather than just get really angry and upset that your wife is choosing to do that herself.
And here we encounter the paradox between being a man and being a woman.
If by paradox you're about to suggest that this is unfair, then I don't agree.
No, it's not that it's not fair. Okay, how about this? Paul and I, I'm going to drag you in here, Paul. Paul and I once had a discussion many years ago.
Oh, here we go.
Where we were talking about, I can't remember if it was a breakup of yours or a breakup of mine, right? But we said that, okay, well, it's just understood by the laws of the universe that if you break up with a girl or you break up in your relationship, the person who's going to move on quicker is the woman. Because women...
I disagree, if that's what we said, because here's my opinion. I know what you're going to say.
When I say move on, I mean get attention from the opposite sex.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so that's... And a woman is like, well, you just sneeze and 20 guys turn up, right? Man, you have to work very hard, especially if you're me. So it's like... and in this movie, we're going to see other people, right? Of course... In a town of 12 motherfuckers, right? She's going to get like a new dick turn up immediately. Right?
Well, if it's a town of 12 motherfuckers, I would assume 12 of them turn up to her house.
Not bad. There you are. Please go on.
Yeah, the person who moves on quickest is the person who does the breaking up because they've been preparing to move.
Ah, good point. Excellent
preparing
point.
Preparing to break up.
This is before you were a shrink and such a smarty.
Maybe. Yeah. But anyway, point is that the film does open really like, whoa, in your face.
Right.
Like, and the pall of that, if you excuse the term, hangs over that this entire film.
Cool.
And then it gets to this point where it all rises to this escalating point of tension. The other guy who she's with keeps saying to her, let me just talk, we'll just sort it out. And you think, is it going to explode?
That's the best scene in the film. Can we agree?
Yeah.
Because it was like, holy shit, what's going on here? Right?
Okay. And then it all goes downhill real fast at that point in time to what leads to me to be a very unsatisfying conclusion.
Yes. That's what happens.
The new guy beats the fuck out of him.
Yeah. So sorry. I mean, just to clear it up.
King hits him. Like, he doesn't give him a chance.
Well, Clayne Crawford goes to talk to his woman who brings his kids home early and whatever. And it turns out that she thought he wasn't going to be back for a while. So the new guy,
Nikki,
she's banging.
Her name's Nikki.
Nikki. Yep. He's there and he comes out. He's there. Yeah. And he comes out and they fucking, what the fuck? You're having a fuck fest in this house while I take care of our kids? Yada, yada, yada. This dude comes out and actually starts engaging and saying, hey, listen, maybe I should talk to him. And, you know, it's a real, he's a bit of a whoa, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how I'd react in that situation, but I wouldn't be all like, so you know I'm fucking your wife and he's shaking my hand, right?
No human being would continue
that. That's
way.
Weird, right? That's really, really weird.
Which is why you knew something was going to be up. Like, on the one hand, you're like, is he that naive? Is David really going to, and this guy's name's Derek, is David really going to just kill Derek on the street?
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another level where you're like, no, he's been too insistent about this. He's got something up his sleeve.
Yeah.
And indeed he does.
And he ends up sucker punching him and King hitting him and
kicks the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he gets this Clayne Crawford dude, gets in the car and drives away all fucked up, pulls his gun, gets into a field. You see that through his eyes, he looks out the window and this Derek guy has driven up in his own car.
Yep.
He's chasing him, gets out of the car. So he runs out of his car. So Clayne Crawford jumps out and starts firing wildly. Then you see what really happened, which is the wife is actually turned up and he was obviously hallucinating that it was David or whatever. Fortunately, he does not shoot his wife.
No, and that next scene is just they're buying a washing machine.
Life is back to normal.
Yeah,
he's
and I'm not sure that's,
back.
That town's big enough to sustain a white goods store, but anyway.
No way. But that was it. And so that is the issue we had with this film is that
just
after this machine, nothing. Now.
Yeah. And it's making a point, right? It delivers a promise in the opening scene and with the title of the film, which it therefore is deliberately and consciously trying to set you up to undermine your expectations.
Right. So I think if you had to try and make sense of this, the title in relation to the movie is that the killing of two lovers is, you might think it was the marriage breaking up, but it's probably the killing of the wife and Derek, who were lovers.
Yeah.
And when she realized that she saw her husband getting his ass kicked, she actually loved him, I guess.
Yep.
She chases after him, hugs him, whatever, and then goes back to that life. So the killing of the two lovers is the other two. But also, that's fine, but it's still not interesting enough.
And to come back to your point, the film shows you at his, I guess, his most unhinged David, where he's pointing the gun at the first scene.
Yes.
And after that, he's never that unhinged again.
He has one moment.
It's almost like we've missed the crescendo to the exciting part of the film.
Agreed.
And instead we've got the downward kind of slide into .
And the effect of that is the character feels more shallow than he should because you've got this opening like, holy shit, this guy could be, you know, anything. And then later on, he just acts pretty typical. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, well, he's just...
Yeah, other than the moment where he takes the dummy out and starts shooting at it in the open field.
Even that was weird.
And chases the other guy, I guess, in the second or third scene of the film. Other than that, the way he's reacting is pretty understandable and relatable.
Yeah, he you could go out and shoot a dummy in a field if you wanted to blow off some steam, and it's not really that bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's far less bad than pointing a gun at someone in bed.
I got to remember this is America where, you know, guns, hooray. But less so here in Australia.
I don't know. It's in Utah, bro.
Yeah.
It's in Utah. So, yes,
pretty
absolutely.
Much to be a Utah-eaten person, you have to have at least 17 guns. Is that what you're saying?
That or Mormon.
Or both.
Or both. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, let's give it a score then, Wayne, and wrap up this first episode. The countdown gets cultured.
Okay. So allowing for my boorishness, I'm going to go give it a 51.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am. 2.5 stars. I'm around 51, 52.
Yeah. If you like this movie, you'll really like it. I was just going to say 51,
too. 51. Now I feel like I can't say that because you just stole my number.
50-esque.
Yeah, 50-esque. yeah, we're both in the same boat, I think, is what we're trying to conclude here. Check it out if you're at all interested. And if you're a little bit more perhaps mainstream sensibility, maybe you don't need to.
But more importantly, if you're one of these artistic, pundits, mavens, and so on that I say.
I don't know what this term maven comes from.
I'm sure it's a real term. I'll look it up and ask you later. But yeah,
show you.
But yeah, if you appreciate it on a level that I do not, which is entirely very probable, hit us up.
Yeah, what do we
drop some comments, yo?
Yeah, what do we
tell me what a dipshit I am.
We are. We've got the score at the same. Remember, and you can do so via email, thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at thecountdownpc. You can like and follow the show on Podbean, where we host. Check out ccradio.com.au for Believe and Comic Confidential, the other two shows on the network, and our Facebook list community in the links in the show notes if you want to get involved in the discussion about films and a bunch of other random things. And that's it. Thanks so much for joining us today for this bonus episode of the show, and we'll catch you on the next main episode soon.
See hopefully.
Ya. Cheers.